Next guest has been receiving alarming reports of doctors targeted by their state medical licensing boards for actually saving their patients' lives. It sounds crazy. Well, it's happening. Joining me now, Dr. Harvey Risch. He's the epidemiology professor at Yale School of Public Health and one of the most renowned minds in the country on epidemiology. Dr. Risch, what treatment is being targeted and how pervasive is this?
Good evening, Laura. So this is, of course, hydroxychloroquine, the word that nobody should ever say, according to half the population. It's a political drug now, not a medical drug, and that's caused the complete population ignorance. And I think we're basically fighting a propaganda war against the medical facts. And that colors not just population people, how they think about it, but doctors as well. And there are many doctors that I've gotten hostile, you know, remarks about saying that all the evidence is bad for it. And in fact, that's not true at all. And it's easy to show that all the evidence is actually good for it when it's used in outpatient uses. Nevertheless, the only people who actually see that are a whole pile of doctors who are actually on the front lines treating those patients across the country. And they are the ones who are at risk of being forced not to do it.
And Dr. Risch, how important would it be now, or significant, if the administration, basically through the FDA, rescinded that warning about hydroxy? It was complete bunk, made a mistake about the warning, and get out of the way of the relationship between the doctor and the patient for off-label use of a medicine that's been around for 65 years. Shouldn't Stephen Hahn of the FDA come out and say, look, we're not going to micromanage your decisions and let this go?
Yes, it would be game changing. In fact, all of the discussion that you had earlier on how to manage going forward through September, October and into next year will change if there's prevention and treatment that works, that's available, and that's safe. And that is, in fact, the case. But the problem is, of course, that nobody wants to hear it and nobody lets it out except for you. You're the only one who's actually, in any way, the mainstream media that is allowing anybody to speak about the evidence for the usage of these drugs.
Now, I've got to say, Dr. Risch, I knew politics was corrupt. I've been covering it for decades. And I knew the law has a lot of corruption because I was a lawyer for a long time. But I didn't know that you could have so much corruption in the medical field when it comes to bureaucrats. And I know there are a lot of good people in government. I'm not singling anyone. And just making people better. It's stunning to me. Last word.
I think there's been a lot, and we hardly know the extent of it, both on from the drug companies, from political contrivances, and so on. I think it's very difficult. The circumstances now are difficult.
Dr. Risch, finally, do you think thousands of lives could be saved going forward if they released that hydroxy stockpile and even gave it as a prophylactic like India has done and other countries have done for frontline workers if they wanted it?
I think 75,000 to 100,000 lives will be saved if that happens.
Well, we're going to keep talking about it. Thank you for speaking out. I know some of your colleagues at other universities, Harvard, your rival over there, might disagree, but we're going to keep talking about it. Doctor, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And despite the media and the medical establishment's claims otherwise, hydroxychloroquine has been found to be so effective in a recent study that it cut the mortality rate in half for COVID. Now, one wonders how many lives have been lost due to this political teeth gnashing and purposeful politicization of the drug by some of President Trump's political adversaries. And it's a drug that's safe and has been used for decades and decades. And although the FDA still issues a warning about using the drug, two prominent doctors are now pushing for it to be offered in small over-the-counter doses. Now, here to tell us more is Dr. Simone Gold. She's a board-certified emergency physician working on the front lines during the pandemic, and Dr. Richard Urso, an ophthalmologist practicing in Houston, Texas. Dr. Gold, tell us about your plan and why it's so important to get this done fast.
Thank you so much, Laura, for having me on the show. You know, I've been tracking the progress of this pandemic and the reaction to the pandemic for months, long before maybe January, February. And initially, I was very excited about hydroxychloroquine, and it was very distressing that the media pounced all over this as though it wasn't a good option after the president endorsed it. So we've known for decades as physicians that hydroxychloroquine is safe, and the evidence is pouring in that it's also effective as well in early and in prophylactic treatment for COVID-19. You know, the president didn't pick hydroxychloroquine out of thin air. There was a lot of evidence to suggest that it would be helpful, and now that this evidence is coming in like a tsunami, it's going to be unstoppable. But because there's been so much politicization of the drug, I just suggest that we make it over-the-counter, simply like we do in the rest of the world.
Oh, I can hear them. I can hear heads exploding across the country tonight by your advocating for that. Now, I just want to remind everybody, this is what Dr. Fauci, okay, wants us to lock all down again, what he said about hydroxychloroquine back in May.
Clearly, the scientific data is really quite evident now about the lack of efficacy for it, and even the possibility that there could be, not could be, but there's, you know, the likelihood that under certain circumstances might be rare, but you'd see it, adverse events.
Well, I could hear plaintiff's attorneys, if this were a practicing physician, with all the data we have now, Dr. Urso, the new Mount Sinai study that found it associated with reduced mortality as well as the Henry Ford study, that this these comments about the drug seem almost akin to malpractice. How does Fauci and why does Fauci seem to want to deny its efficacy, Dr. Urso?
Laura, thank you. You know, the political backstory I always have a hard time trying to figure out, but he's clearly wrong on what he said. Hydroxychloroquine is super safe. I'm particularly have a lot of experience with it. I've had several thousand patient visits to discuss specifically the toxicity of this drug over my last 30 years. It's super safe drug. It's safer than Tylenol, aspirin, Motrin. It's been around, you know, a billion prescriptions. In the largest analysis ever, there's probably 50 patient deaths in all time that have been attributed to this drug. So for him to make claims like that, the only thing I could say is he's right in some respects. If you give toxic doses, if you give 34 milligrams per kilogram instead of giving like 6.5, yeah, you probably will have adverse events. And in those studies he's citing, they gave massively high doses and what I would consider to be inappropriate doses. So I think if I can just add one little thing, Laura, it's that this QT interval that everybody's so scared of, the heart recharges every time it beats, and it recharges. And the only thing I can tell you is I've been working with this drug for 30 years, okay, and I've never had a patient taken off of it from a heart issue,
yeah.
All right? And I've went out of my way to talk to cardiologists about this over the last 4 months. Not a single one has ever taken this a patient off for this reason.
I want to get into this. I don't mean to interrupt, but Dr. Gold, I have heard repeatedly that doctors who have pushed to prescribe this to patients, knowing it works and knowing it's safe, have been targeted. I mean, this is like a medical cancel culture applied to this particular medication. No one's saying it's a cure, by the way, but it reduces the viral load in all the patients that Dr. Smith has treated, most all the patients he's treated at an early level. The Turks have had incredible success, obviously in India and other countries. But doctors being targeted now and being threatened, Dr. Gold, what about that?
Well, for sure. I've absolutely myself personally experienced that. I know many doctors who've been targeted and threatened and sanctioned, risk losing their job. Absolutely. They're brought up by the state medical board. And I'll come close to saying, I'll come more than you, it is a cure. You know, if somebody says I could give you the best chemotherapy agent, or they give you the option of not getting cancer in the first place, I'll take the not getting the cancer. So you have to understand that the COVID disease is really two different problems. If you get the virus and you treat it early, it's one problem. But if you get it late and treat it late or sick, it's very effective.
Dr. Urso, really quickly, Peter Navarro has pointed to the national stockpile of hydroxychloroquine, that needs to basically be moved out and used where the indication is, to use where it's most effective. Is that a good sign?
Yeah, that's a good sign. I'm glad they're doing that. The problem is the fear factor for physicians of reprisals. So that's what we have to get past, the fear of reprisals. And also, you know, basically this misinformation campaign when they gave toxic massive doses has really tainted the drug in some respects. So we've got to get past those two issues. The drug is super safe in its normal doses.
The FDA, the president has got to step in here. The FDA is, I mean, the good people there, I know, they're
disserving him right now. I've got a frog in my throat talking about this. All right, thank you so much, doctor. It's great to see you.
Well, we have some more studies out. Looks like hydroxychloroquine does work. Looks like ivermectin works as well. And Anthony Fauci, kind of late to the mutation game, but hey, we'll cover it anyway. Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Chris Martinson here, July 7th, 2020. And we're here with your update on SARS-CoV-2. Let's go. All right, moving on from that, let's talk now about the media war on hydroxychloroquine. This is CNN edition. So remember back here on May 11th, right? It says here, yet another study shows hydroxychloroquine doesn't work against COVID. Look at this. Elizabeth Cohen right here. Comes out 4:57, right? Right there, right in the middle of the day. Going to make a big splash. Yet another study shows it doesn't work. Actually, this was a bogus study and actually didn't show anything of the sort. But meanwhile, when now we have this new one that just came out here, study finds hydroxychloroquine helped coronavirus patients survive better. What kind of passive language is that? And oh, by the way, when did this come out? 11:24 at night on Thursday. Just sneak that out. Maybe nobody will notice. Elizabeth Cohen again. So just anyway, anything that's this is why I call it the media war. Anything that shows that hydroxychloroquine doesn't work and therefore supports the latest pharmaceutical money, advertising and sexy cure. CNN is happily out there promoting it at 4:57 in the afternoon. But look at this passive language. Helped coronavirus patients survive better? Hey, that's called not dying. That's called help them. It's just like hydroxychloroquine prevented deaths, unnecessary deaths, because it really did a great job. So at any rate, let's look at that study right now. It wasn't the world's best study, but it's better than other ones that we've had. I'll talk about the whole thing here real quick. So here's the more active headline you should have heard from CNN. Hydroxychloroquine reduces death rate by half. Okay, big deal. So that's the right way to write this out. And by the way, this data came out early enough to get it out, before 11:24 at night. Nice job there, CNN. Way to go. All right, quote, a Henry Ford Health System study shows the controversial anti-malaria drug hydroxychloroquine helps lower the death rate of COVID-19 patients. The Detroit-based health system said Thursday, learn to speak. Officials with the Michigan Health System said the study found the drug significantly decreased the death rate of patients involved in the analysis. The study analyzed 2,541 patients hospitalized among the system's six hospitals between March 10th and May 2nd and found 13% of those treated with hydroxychloroquine died, while 26% of those who did not receive the drug died. All right. Again, hospitalized, so a little bit late to the game, but I'll show you that they controlled for that as best they can. We'll look into that in just a second. Among all patients in the study, there was an overall in-hospital mortality rate of 18%. Still not great. Tells me that they're getting there just a little bit late with all of this, but that's okay. This was March 10th to May 2nd. That's really early in the game. I don't think we really appreciated back here in March. I don't think anybody did. In the whole system, except for a very, very few number of people, about the importance of having hydroxychloroquine administered as early as possible in that, because it's an antiviral. It's not a cure for what happens after the virus has started to cause mass damage in your body. It's a thing that prevents the virus from replicating as rapidly. So it has to get in there early, of course. And many who died had underlying conditions that put them at greater risk, according to Henry Ford Health System. Globally, the mortality rate for hospitalized patients is between 10 and 30%, or even a little bit higher if you're the ridiculous UK recovery trial. Oh my God, they were just awful, awful statistics there. And it's 58% among those in intensive care unit or on a ventilator. All right, let me see. And yet, bad science, worse medicine continues. So, all right, now let me skip that. We'll go here. I don't need to beat on how bad the reporting is on this time. So let's take a look here. Oh, hey, look, hey, here's from the actual study. Here's the link to it down here. This is the actual study that they did at the Henry Ford Health System out there in Detroit. The main outcome they were looking for is in-hospital mortality. And so it's a well-powered study, meaning a lot of patients, 2,541 patients, a median total hospitalization time of 6 days, median age 64 years, 51% male, 56% African-American, a median time to follow-up of 28 and a half days. Overall, in-hospital mortality, that's everybody taking hydroxychloroquine or not, of 18.1%. And by treatment, they had this many, 157 out of 73 were taking both hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin. And so that would have been about 20.1%. And hydroxychloroquine alone was 13.5%. And azithromycin alone was 22.4%, and taking neither drug, 26.4%. All right. The primary cause of mortality was respiratory failure. That's 88%. No surprise there. No patient had documented torsade de pointe. That is the heart condition that happens when you have a prolongation of your QT interval, which QTC interval, which results in your heart actually having a an issue which leads to, quite often, torsade de pointe leads to death. So what they're basically saying is, oh, by the way, the hydroxychloroquine was totally safe because we had no patient had documented torsade de pointe. So they're reporting zero heart issues from this. So shame to all those doctors out there who've been saying how dangerous hydroxychloroquine is. That is just bad science, of course. So the predictors of mortality were age, of course. Being over 65 years was a pretty strong predictor with a ratio there of 2.6. So that's pretty high. White race, interestingly, because I would have expected that to be the opposite, with an HR of 1.7. CKD, reduced O2 saturation level on admission, and ventilator use. So yeah, if you came in, you're over 65, you were white, you had elevated protein levels, you had reduced O2 saturation and ventilator use. Yeah. So that those would all have been things that would have said you're in bad shape. All right. So hydroxychloroquine provided a 66% hazard ratio reduction, and hydroxychloroquine plus azithromycin, a 71% hazard reduction ratio compared to neither. That's a p-value of 0.001. Still not the study we're looking for. Why? Because you searched the whole document. Zero mentions of zinc. Come on, people, put the zinc in there. And as well, let's look here. This is from the methods. They say patients with a COVID-related admission in the health system from March 10th to May 2nd were included. Only the first admission was included for patients with multiple admissions. So if you came back to the hospital a couple times, you only got counted if it was your first time there. But this means by the time you're admitted to the health system, you're pretty far gone. So this is a little further along than we would like to see for hydroxychloroquine. Obviously, we'd want to see that administered as soon as symptomology shows up, as early as possible. All right. A COVID-related admission was defined as hospitalization during which the patient had a positive SARS-CoV-2 test. Diagnosis was confirmed with the RT-PCR assay from a nasopharyngeal sample, and all patients were over 18 years of age and were at least 48 hours in the hospital. All right, all that's fine. It's good. I'm glad they tested for SARS-CoV-2. Unlike that, remember that Bulwar study where they had people self-reporting and they were trying to use hydroxychloroquine in a pre-exposure prophylaxis way. Remember that? And the people self-reported on a web page that they thought they had COVID-like symptoms, and they had doctors agree that those were COVID-like. No good. Here, at least they tested. So that's good. So that's the good part, but it's still not quite the study we're looking for because it's a little bit late by the time they're admitted to the healthcare system. But got a lot closer to the study we were looking for. All right. In this present study, they used to control for potential confounders, affirmed that treatment with hydroxychloroquine alone and HCQ in combination with azithromycin was associated with higher survival among patients with COVID-19. Very declarative right there. I like that. Patients that received neither medication or azithromycin alone had the highest cumulative hazard. So don't take azith alone. Doesn't seem to be doing it. So azith plus hydroxychloroquine or HCQ alone, those things right there. But pretty much it's the hydroxychloroquine that you want to have in that system. The plus seems to help a little bit, and that would be the other things in there. The benefits of hydroxychloroquine in our cohort as compared to previous studies may be related to its use early in the disease course with standardized and safe dosing. You listen to that, you recovery trial people from the UK? Safe dosing, not 2,400 milligrams in the first 24 hours. Continuing here, inclusion criteria, comorbidities, or larger cohort. So they're saying here, look, the benefits of this, why is our study different from other ones? Well, because it might be maybe related to its use early in the disease course. So the way they did this, as soon as people came in, they would get the hydroxychloroquine as fast as they could get it to them. I know these people were presenting to the hospital. That's a little late in the game. But to control as best they could, they gave it to them as early and as soon as possible. Whereas in other things, they're like, oh, well, we gave it within a couple of days, you know, within 48 hours. Like, what are you talking about within 48 hours? Give that in 10 minutes. At any rate, the postulated pathophysiology of COVID-19 of the initial viral infection phase, followed by the hyperimmune response, suggests potential benefit of the early administration of hydroxychloroquine for its antiviral and antithrombotic properties. Both of these, look at this, antiviral and antithrombotic, and look, suggest potential, look how careful they're being, potential benefit of early administration, early. Yes, later therapy in patients that have already experienced hyperimmune response or critical illness is less likely to be of benefit. And of course, all those studies you've been hearing about, it didn't work. It's like they were designed to fail. They would give it late, right? Sometimes they'd give it to people who are already on ventilators. It's like, no, the virus has already had its way in that body. It's already destroyed things. It's no, you can't give it then. You have to give it early. So here they are saying that's what they did. And look, it cut deaths by half, even though this is still kind of late in the system, in the game. All right. I always love it when people put in their limitations. They say here, limitations to our analysis include the retrospective, non-randomized, non-blinded study design. Okay, we would love to see. And why are we in July and we still don't have a randomized blinded study done properly? Okay. Also, information on duration of symptoms prior to hospitalization was not available for analysis, and we'd love to have that too, because were these people symptomatic for 7 days, 8 days, 9 days beforehand, 2 days? That would be really important. So good job setting it up as best they could. Good job noting their limitations. They get marks on all of that. So let's see, but it is still getting a lot closer. They say here in a separate multi-center cohort study of 1,438 patients in New York, we talked about this study, no reduction in hospitalized patient mortality was observed with hydroxy treatment. And among a number of limitations, this study included patients who were initiated on hydroxychloroquine therapy at any time during their hospitalization. In contrast, in our patient population, 82% received hydroxychloroquine within the first 24 hours of admission. Ding, big. We'll give you a big star for that right there. Okay. That's awesome, because they noted that. And this is one of the first studies I've seen where they gave this within the first 24 hours of admission, and 91% received it within 48 hours of admission. So I think this explains a lot of the benefit that they saw. And this is in contrast to that big New York trials thing, which was didn't even try to give it to them on time or early, just sort of gave it to them whenever they felt like it. You know, oh, you know, this person's already dying, might as well try it, you know. Awful study design. But we saw so many of those awful studies where it was like you would never design that on purpose like that, and a thoughtful person would say, let's not do it like that. And yet it was done over and over and over again, almost as if people were trying to get it to fail. But of course, you know, that's fine. If you want to fail a chemistry test, go for it and have fun. But when your failure results in the death of your patient, I'm really having trouble with this. I'm struggling with the choices that are being made here. All right. Continuing on, they said here, because treatment regimens likely varied substantially, including delayed initiation across 25 hospitals that contributed patients to the study, it's not surprising the case fatality rate among the New York patients was significantly higher than in our study. That's doctor speak for slam. They're slamming that other study, but very nicely. So well done. Remember, to conduct a proper hydroxychloroquine study, this is a slide from April 27th from my daily update. It's not hard. Randomize that trial. Whoops, not that pen. Let me get the yellow pen out. You want that randomized trial, full stop? Yep. Treatment begun early, as soon as diagnosis or upon appearance of suggestive symptoms, and then do the test later and confirm later, but just as soon as possible. Don't wait to get a positive test and then say, okay. Like, you know, if people have that shortness of breath, they've got any of those other symptoms, the anosmia, the loss of sense of smell. Dude, give them the treatment, then take the test. All right. Some of the early studies forgot to record the doses and or the dosing frequency. So I was like, obviously, let's record the doses. And also, I should put in here, I guess now I would amend this by saying, don't give toxic levels, right, UK recovery people? As well, zinc should be included, blood levels tracked. Plus minus azithromycin. I was even all the way back here in April, I wasn't sure if that was going to be a huge add-on. This study says, it's not, I would say, yeah, sure, go ahead. 66% hazard reduction ratio from hydroxychloroquine. Looks like you get another 5% out of that, because you add the azithromycin there at 71%. So sure. That's why I was a little equivocal. I said plus minus if you really want to parse it all out. Otherwise, sure, just include it. How did I know this back in April 27th? I'm not a clinical design specialist, but this was rather easily deduced way back then. Okay. So the interesting part is, again, why no zinc? How is it we are still missing zinc in this story over and over and over again? This is from a comment by Island Girl on my website over at Peak Prosperity from Friday, July 3rd. And says here, after rereading the Henry Ford Hospital study that we were just looking at right now this morning and noting no zinc was used, I started a literature search on zinc and ionophores. This paper caught my eye. Back in 2010, Robert Barrick, remember that name, I'll talk to you about him in just a second, and other coronavirus researchers studied the potential for zinc and ionophores to block viral replication in vitro and in cell culture, and that's 10 years ago. And here's the link to that paper. What first surprised me is how old these data are. We've known this for a long time. But then what caught my eye and startled me was the author list, Robert Barrick. So before I go on, Robert Barrick is one of the people who was doing gain-of-function research on coronaviruses. In theory, one of the coronavirus experts in the world. All right? Remember, folks, it just didn't have to be this way. It just didn't. We could have done so much better on this, and I'm really disappointed with how slowly the news about what sorts of effective treatments might work and could work out there. And by the way, ivermectin is really on that list. I realize now, coming to the end of this, I forgot to slip a couple slides in here. I'll talk about it next time. But ivermectin has had really astonishingly good results across the world, so we'll talk about that. All right. Remember, you can get a t-shirt and join a movement. Send that a pic of yourself in the t-shirt to info@peakprosperity.com. And we'll post it here if you want to have your picture posted. I think you should plant a garden. Just absolutely plant a garden. Remember to do that. And remember, take your immune boosters out there. The quercetin and zinc gives you the ionophore over here on the quercetin and the zinc to get that stuff in. And that's a really good thing. Plus vitamin D3 together, that trio. Absolutely essential for immune boosting to make sure that your terrain is as appropriately conditioned as possible. Remember, if you have to, resubscribe if necessary, because people get unsubscribed from this channel all the time because I keep doing things like bashing the WHO, which apparently is bad form. But who knew? I think they deserve to be bashed. So that difference of opinion, but it means that you might have to resubscribe. All right, that's all I got for today. Got a really good program coming next time. Can't wait. See you then. Bye-bye.
The full-throated effort to discredit hydroxychloroquine is at a fever pitch. Federal agencies claim that it doesn't work and is dangerous. But studies demonstrate the opposite effect, and the drug is being credited for saving countless lives as part of a drug cocktail treatment. We'll dive into what looks like political theater in this episode of Activate America, fighting against unconstitutional government lockdown. Knowing what we do about how globalists in the media and the deep state agencies of the federal government react to President Trump, is it any wonder that there is now a war on hydroxychloroquine? After all, the president endorsed it, which means that the media and deep state feels obligated to wage a propaganda war on it. But let's also not brush aside the obvious. If a readily available, easily made, and inexpensive pill or combination of pills can do the job of either saving lives or greatly diminishing the effects of COVID-19 infection, then the need for a vaccine is greatly diminished, perhaps even eliminated. And that's one of the great points that Dennis Barrett makes in his cover story in the newest issue of the New American magazine. He wrote, "Within this framework, the motivation behind the media and Democratic politicians' unceasing attacks on hydroxychloroquine becomes understandable. Though the science is not yet settled and important studies are ongoing, some research and plenty of clinical anecdotal evidence continue to point to the drug as a useful treatment for COVID-19. If it is, then the need for a vaccine forced on the world's population is diminished or even eliminated. And with that, the plan to track everyone via a digital vaccine ID has had a stake firmly planted in its heart. Thus, we have an all-out campaign of demonization waged against the drug, convincing Americans to abandon hope of a non-vaccine treatment." Throughout his article, Mr. Barrett offers examples of the propaganda war waged against the studies, the doctors, and the people who are promoting the drug. He also has examples of patients who have been helped by the drug, including Democratic Michigan State Representative Karen Whitsett, who has credited President Trump and hydroxychloroquine for saving her life. In a phone interview with Click on Detroit Local 4, she said,
"And I thank God that the President of the United States mentioned that drug because it did save me."
This gave her an opportunity to meet with the president and vice president, and she shared with them her ideas on the local needs of those in Detroit. Shortly thereafter, she was unanimously censured by the 13th Congressional District Democratic Party organization. In the censure resolution, they mentioned that her actions and public statements have demonstrated an inconsistency with the values and priorities of the Democratic Party. Right, since they apparently would rather place politics over health care. And that is the lesson for today's episode. COVID-19 has brought out the agenda of the tyrants who mean to rule us. There are plenty of good elected officials on both sides of the aisle that understand the constitutional limitations of the government, but there are fewer who actually obey these limitations. Those who continue to lock down their communities do so as a means of control and conditioning. They are merely a representation of the electorate that voted them in. If you are in the unfortunate situation of being locked down or are subjected to government safety mandates, then know that what you choose to do or not do will directly reflect the electorate in your area. You will either choose to do nothing, which tells those in charge that you're happy with the status quo, or you will choose to get involved to change the direction of the electorate. So what can one person do? Well, on their own, very little. However, within an organized effort to restore liberty, one can be a puller at the oars of a mighty ship. The John Birch Society is not a political organization, but we do have the tools to help you better inform your electorate and to show them how they can be a very powerful force in shaping the direction of that electorate. The July 20th issue of the New American magazine can be a great tool for you. In fact, it can be a great tool twofold. One is the cover story, which exposes the politics over healthcare tyranny that you can use to pass along to others to help them understand the benefits and the promise that hydroxychloroquine holds. And the second is the latest installment of the Freedom Index, which is a scorecard of congressmen based on their adherence to the Constitution. These scores are based on 10 key votes taken since November. The average score in the House was a paltry 35%, but the Senate scored even lower at just 24%. And believe it or not, even Congresswoman AOC scored far above many Republicans, even though her votes were all for the wrong reasons. However, the Freedom Index can be a powerful tool if the electorate uses these scores to inform their fellow voters about how well their congressmen are adhering to the Constitution. The July 20th issue can be a powerful one. How will you choose to use it? If you need specific ideas, your local coordinator can certainly help implement them. These include local mailings to voters, letters to the editor, talk radio discussions, social media shares, neighborhood distributions, and online webinars. Links are in the video description. With your help, we will make freedom the cure. And until next time, this is Bill Hahn for the John Birch Society saying, stay active, everyone.